From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio and, of course, on Channel 7. Diane Diamond is one of my favorite guests. She's a investigative journalist, an author, a special correspondent with Entertainment Tonight, and someone I bring on when the hot topics of the day are there to be discussed. Diane, welcome back to the show.
Oh, I'm always glad to be with you. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Now, before we get into, we're going to talk a little bit about, of course, Ferguson, and then we'll get into Mr. Cosby and whether or not he should keep his pants on. What's new with you? I hear something new and exciting is out there now.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been working on something for a couple of years, kind of hush-hush. It's an experimental, developmental TV program, and it's like what you do, Dana. It's call-in talk radio, but it's on television.
Cool.
And, yeah, it's called Talk Center America. You could go check it out at talkcenteramerica.com. And we've done all sorts of different kinds of programming from I've done special. I'm sort of the guinea pig host for all of these things. We've done, I don't know, 75 hours, I think, of programming from specials on crime and justice to the Ebola problem to the right to die problem. We did a game show. We've done a paranormal show, and it's all about the audience.
Right.
The audience, the listeners, the viewers get to call in via Skype. We figured out a way to make the Skype calls never drop out, and they get to drive the show.
Wow.
So it's a whole new genre of TV, and I've been really lucky to get in sort of on the ground floor. So.
And where can we find this?
Well, it's at talkcenteramerica.com. If you just monitor that website, we'll tell you when the next shows are. We just had a couple of shows last night, probably next Tuesday night, but check the website. And right now we're doing once a week, but we're talking to lots of TV groups, and I think you'll see us on regular TV pretty soon. It's a way to marry television and the web that's never been figured out before. So it's real exciting.
Huh. Well, you know what? You and I are going to have to talk about this a little bit off air.
Yes, let's do it. Let's do it.
Hint, hint. Anyway, let's...
Looking for good hosts, Dana.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think I might be able to recommend somebody to you. Anyway, listen, we have an incident in New York. In fact, I've got the news channel in the background here. I'm watching. Looks like demonstrations in New York City. Of course, Ferguson, the Michael Brown shooting. We've covered it extensively here. I want to get your thoughts, first of all, on the non-indictment and what's been going on since.
In Ferguson?
Right.
Yeah, in Ferguson, I think, well, and here again, we'll just enlighten your viewers who don't know. In New York tonight, there was a decision by another grand jury not to indict a white officer who caused the death of a unarmed black man. And people are out in Times Square. It's yeah. Crazy here in New York right now. What do I think? I think that we are a land of laws, and this is the way it works. There were secret proceedings in Ferguson and here in New York, Staten Island, New York, where people who live next door to us, our neighbors, our friends, black and white and Asian and Hispanic, all saw the evidence that we are not allowed to see, and they made their decisions, and they said no indictment in Ferguson, no indictment in Staten Island, New York, and we need to live with that because that's the law of the land. Now, having said that, I think it's also important to understand that there's a real problem in America with minority, I'm trying to pick my words really carefully, with minority young people dying at the hands of the police. Doesn't mean that they're perfectly innocent. Doesn't mean that they shouldn't have been more respectful to the police. But when a life is lost, I think we need to stop and look at things, and I think we're going to see some real changes in the way police academies train their young recruits, the way police desk sergeants send out their officers. I think we're standing on the cusp of some real change here.
It's such a huge story, Diane, and a couple of weeks back when this was going on, I sent O'Reilly a note, and I said, police work is 90% routine and 10% sheer adrenaline and terror. And how do I know that? Well, I've lived it for over 30 years. And that's just it. All of a sudden, you handle your call, you do this. A routine call turns into someone trying to grab your gun. The chokehold debate we can continue on with for many, many shows. But what I see so sad here, Diane, is the politicism of this, how it's turned political, how certain groups have grabbed onto it, how the networks have covered it, and now all of a sudden the so-called protesters, and there's nothing wrong with protesting, but when you become a criminal and you're only interested in is damaging and looting, that's not doing anything to tell more about the story.
Absolutely not.
What about the cover?
Our U.S. Constitution, I was just finishing up a column for my syndicated column this coming weekend, and our Constitution says we have the right to go out and protest, but there's a divisiveness in this country, I think, and in there's such a chasm between the races that we don't understand. I'm white. I understand what black people are going through because, like you, I've reported on it. Yep. I've lived it. I've seen it firsthand. I've looked into the eyes of black mothers who say, I know my son was not acting right with the police, but did they have to kill him? And, of course, the answer is no. Maybe there could have been a better way. But I just, you're right. It's such a complicated, multi-layered problem that we could talk about it for hours and still not bridge that gap between black and white and Hispanic and Asian. Everybody's got their own view of it. The bottom line is, I think something has to give because there's not just demonstrations in Times Square tonight. There were demonstrations in Canada, yep, and California and Colorado and Miami and Washington State and all over the country about this. So I think we're watching a real revolution.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Diane Diamond's here. She's a syndicated columnist. She's an investigative reporter and author and a good friend of the program. And what, you know, Diane, when you see these sorts of stories, and you see most recently the St. Louis football team, some of the players coming out with their hands up. Of course, the Al Sharptons of the world and others that grab these stories, run to them, and try to, well, do whatever they do. And then you look at
advantage.
Exactly. And then when you look at the big story when it comes out, the prosecutor that got up the other night and went over it, there was no way he was going to win or lose. He was going to be vilified no matter how he handled this. What about that? What about the coverage, though, that the networks are doing? Of course, it's slanted so many different ways.
It is. You know, I watch CNN a lot. I watch MSNBC. I watch Fox. I watch everything because I want to get all viewpoints. Anybody out there listening that says, oh, I never listen to Fox, or oh, I never listen to MSNBC, well, you should, because there are all sorts of different ways to look at a situation. The media, to my mind, and I say this with a heavy heart because I was actively involved as a member of the media for so many years, but I think they sort of, no, I won't even say sort of, they fan the flames. Tonight I was watching CNN, and the big question was, okay, we're in New York, and the protesters are in Times Square, and just a few blocks away, it's the Christmas tree lighting ceremony. Right. Will they disrupt it?
Yeah. Jeez.
Well, really?
Yeah.
How about planting an idea in protesters' minds? you know, as far as I know, the tree lighting ceremony went on as planned, and Mariah Carey got to sing her song, and they lit the tree, and, you know, everything was fine. But I do get this feeling, Dana, to your question, that the media is not responsible in their reporting. I watched CNN tonight. I love Wolf Blitzer's my intellectual boyfriend. He doesn't even know that, but I love watching his show. Tonight, however, after this announcement was made that no grand jury indictment here in Staten Island, New York, I listened for 45 minutes and only saw black faces from the NAACP and other groups responding. And I kept thinking, where's law enforcement?
Yeah.
Where's the District Attorney's Association president? Where are white members of Congress, not just black members of Congress? It just doesn't feel very balanced to me.
And then the mayor comes out, and again, it's early in this, and sometimes politicians speak with their feet in their mouths before they even think, and basically slam the officers. You know, it's sickening, because as you know, my life has been law enforcement for many years, and
right.
I grew up. My father was a police officer, and
thank you and your family for your sacrifice, by the way.
And when you see that, and this mayor, and the president and the attorney general and whoever else, come and join me in the patrol car some night. And when we go down a back alley and you have to deal with someone that is crazed on a hallucinogenic drug or has a weapon or whatever, come and join us sometime and then make your comments. Are there bad cops out there? Absolutely. I interviewed Drew Peterson, for heaven's sakes. One of the highest rated programs I ever had.
Exactly.
Are there bad
members of minority groups out there who goad the cops,
absolutely,
who show disrespect, who are high on drugs, that don't care whether or not they live and die or take another life on the street? You bet.
Absolutely.
We don't talk about that much.
We don't, and we need to talk about it more. And as these stories unfold, whether it's the Michael Brown family, Officer Wilson, the family of the deceased in New York, or the officers involved there, this will go on and on, and race relations is certainly something that needs to be improved on. Diane Diamond is here, and we're going to switch channels here a little bit, so to speak, and we're going to talk about Bill Cosby. Here we go.
It's a big switch.
Yeah, it's 15 accusers, I think, now. Some of the accusations go back 40 years, 30 years, 20 years. You know, if it was one, and I'm all about victim rights, believe anybody who knows me, I've spoke on behalf of victims for many years, but now all of a sudden we've got 15, and Mr. Cosby just says it's innuendo. What about that? Here's someone who is falling from grace for sure.
Well, you know, actually, I heard tonight that it was 17 members.
Okay.
17 women so far have come forward. And the last one is a woman who claims at the age of 15.
Jeez.
Now, that's child molesting.
Yep.
At the age of 15, she was, very similar story, drugged with something in her alcoholic beverage and sexually assaulted. So, you know, it does remind me a bit, you know, my background. I've done a lot of child molesting trials, Jerry Sandusky, Michael Jackson. And there's one thing for sure. When the accusers are all telling the same kind of story and they are emotional and sobbing as they do it, you better listen.
Yeah.
You know, yes, somebody can read the paper and say, oh, yeah, I'm going to claim that Bill Cosby did that to me, too. But if they sit in front of a camera or a reporter and they tell a story without emotion, we don't believe them. Reporters don't believe them. But these women against Cosby all say the same thing with a trembling chin and tears in their eyes, and it's still raw and ugly for them. We have to listen. Yeah, I'm very interested in this lawsuit that's just been filed today by this woman claiming as a 15-year-old she was raped, because she's filing in California, Dana, and the laws are different there. The law says, actually, there's a Michael Jackson accuser, two of them, who just came forward under California law and said, we just realized what happened to us. We have just had the realization that our nervous breakdowns or our failure to thrive in our lives were because we were molested. And that's when the statute of limitations clock begins, at that realization, not when the alleged abuse took place, but at the realization. So that's what this woman against Cosby is claiming. She just figured it out. That's why her life has been such a mess, and she's filed suit. So Cosby's either going to have to go to court and defend himself or settle out of court. I'm betting, Dana, he does the latter.
Yeah, Gloria Allred's involved now, and or at least is in the media talking about it now, and I'm sure she'll get directly involved. As far as the statute of limitations go, there's some New York cases, some California ones. We're going to have Wendy Murphy on a little bit later on to ask her about that.
She'll know the law, yeah.
Yeah, we'll ask her, Wendy, about that. But, you know, you have that celebrity, that role model, I guess, for a lot of people, kids, myself included, growing up. You and I are about the same young age, I remember the original Bill Cosby show and the Fat Albert cartoons and the records in the late 60s. And to see this now, and I think he's 75 or 78 or something like that.
Imagine, isn't it? It shakes your faith in human nature.
Exactly. And you got to wonder how many people are sitting back now saying, you know, we criticize, and I do on this program, the hip-hop artists and the gangsters that are out there and the kids that emulate and love them, the violent video games and all that. And now, for heaven's sakes, Bill Cosby is falling off the radar and looks like, allegedly, nothing more than a rapist. What about that person?
You know, his attorney, Marty Singer,
right,
is a very powerful man in Hollywood. I have come up against him myself as a reporter, a very threatening kind of man. And he has out and out called some of these women liars. They're dirty liars. And you know what? That's libel. That's slander. They can now sue Marty Singer if they want to. I don't know that it'll go that far because, except for this one who just filed suit today, they don't seem to want anything. They're not asking for money. They're just asking for us all to realize that a rapist or a child molester can be anybody, even our celebrity icons.
And how the media, again, I hate to stick on this, is covering the story.
You're right.
It is very interesting. A few years back, when Anna Nicole Smith passed away, and I was doing a story with an author about Howard Stern. 2 days later, I had a registered letter in the mail from his attorney, another bulldog, Lynn Wood, saying, take what you said off of the internet because otherwise I'll sue you. And I said to him, go ahead. And I never heard back from him. So
much for freedom of the press. Right?
Absolutely. It's interesting to see, even in our what we're doing as far as social media goes, just out there who's listening. And it's a whole big world out there, and Mr. Cosby is not getting very good press.
No, he's not. And, you know, I keep watching media in the morning. Again, my flip from CNBC to MSNBC to Fox to, you know, my local stations, Today Show, all of that. And they all keep saying, and, you know, Bill Cosby has refused to comment. We're waiting. We're trying to get him to comment. And he's not going to say anything.
No.
Are we delusional?
Exactly.
We rightfully should keep asking his camp for a comment. But this is a no-win situation for him. You know, after accusers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, maybe he could have said something, but he didn't. And now I think, if I'm right, the tally's up to 17 women.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's disheartening, but it's another story that will continue on. Now, we just have a couple of minutes left with you, Diane, and
sure,
we'll talk more. I want to talk just a little bit more and get you to talk a little bit more about Talk Center America, because I'm already getting some emails here to get you to tell a little bit more. In fact, one of them says, the site Diane referenced looks really interesting. Get her to tell us more. So here we go.
To hear. here. Well, I'll tell you, TalkCenterAmerica.com. If you go there, there's a little explanation video at the top that I have hosted for them. This is the invention of a man named Tom Wolveen. And Tom worked at NBC. He was the executive producer for Tom Brokaw at the White House for a while. He was a big NBC executive. So he knows news. He knows good content. But he's also an inventor. And Talk Center America Technology is, I believe, his fourth or fifth patent. He's gotten this patented, and it's like nothing you've ever seen before. I, as the host, and I'm training others right now, sit at a console, and I get to bring in all the callers who come in via video Skype. This is the unique thing about it. It's a call-in talk radio, but it's on TV. So I bring in the videos, callers. I bring in all the still pictures. I control all the cameras. I control all the video, preset videos, and it's the talent in control of the program. There's no big control room in the back telling you what to do next. It's the talent controlling the show, and the driving force is the audience. It's a call-in format. So, you know, when the Ebola thing was happening here in the United States, right, everybody wondered, oh, my God, can I get it? I live in Dallas, Texas. I live in New York where there's a case here. And so we brought on experts, and people got to call in and ask the questions that they weren't getting answered on mainstream media. I had a pregnant woman call in. Actually, she tweeted in, and she said, I'm pregnant, and I hear if I get it, it's 100% fatal. Is that true?
Jeez.
And my experts were able to say to her, no, that's not true.
Right.
And you're probably never, ever going to get it, so don't worry. So it's a real comfort to me to be involved in a type of media that really connects with the audiences and answers the questions that you've got out there that nobody's really asking.
Well, it sounds
fascinating. I just think it's a wave of the future.
Well, it sounds fascinating, and it's something that I tried to coin the phrase years ago that on this show we weren't mainstream media, we were more main street media, and we like to involve the people and get their opinions, and I think that's exactly what you're doing. Listen, Diane's website link is in the show notes, and of course Talk Center America is something that we all need to take a look at and take a listen to.
You've got to come down and see our setup. Come on.
Always a pleasure. We'll talk soon.
Thanks a lot, Dana. Thanks for having me.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye. That's Diane Diamond, investigative journalist and entertainment reporter, and someone who has something that looks very interesting. Anyway, we're going to take a break, and we're going to be back here on Channel 7 and Scared Monkeys Radio with Pat Brown, criminal profiler, to get her thoughts on Ferguson, and it should be interesting to see what she has to say about Bill Cosby. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. Criminal profiler Pat Brown is here tonight to share her thoughts on what's been going on in Ferguson and a little bit of discussion on Mr. Cosby. Pat, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Dana.
I'm looking at, kind of as we're speaking, I'm flipping around the news channels here, and it looks like we have another non-indictment of a law enforcement officer, this time in New York, in the streets of like Times Square, I believe. I'm flipping channels back and forth, is starting to fill up with protesters and thugs and hooligans. Your thoughts on the non-indictments? Let's start with Ferguson and then go into New York.
Okay, well, Ferguson, I'm totally in line with what the police officer was doing his duty and was not responsible for the death of Michael Brown. I'm totally on the side of that. And I'll tell you why. And I'm really disturbed by the Ferguson thing, because there is racism still in this country.
Yeah.
No one is denying that. And there are still some cops who are racist. You know, that happens. You can have a poster child for, you know, a kind of a hate crime like this. But this was not it. And it drives me nuts when I see something misused so terribly. First of all, because it's wrong to begin with to misuse something. And secondly, because it also hurts the issue. If you're trying to make an issue over that there's still racism and there are still police officers out there who, you know, may be racist in their dealings, this is not the case you want to use as an example. I mean, it just appalls me. Because we're taking a look at Michael Brown, and we'll take a look at Darren Wilson. Now, each one of them had a responsibility to the community. Now, Darren Wilson took an oath as a police officer, and his oath is to protect the community. He is to stop crime, and he is to protect innocent people from criminals. That is his job. And every day he goes out and does that, and I can tell you, having a daughter who is a police officer, and I've done ride-alongs with her, every time you get in that car and you drive out for 8 hours in a community which has a relative amount of crime in it, you always wonder, if you're coming home that night, yep. You always wonder when all hell is going to break loose and something dangerous is going to occur. You know, and you can have a day after day where things are quiet and you're like, yeah, this is kind of, you know, business as usual. And then all of a sudden, boom, you know, there it is. And it's a frightening thing to have to live with every day of your life as a police officer. Yet you go out and you do it because you're being a brave police officer. And Darren Wilson was doing that. He was doing his duty. Now, Michael Brown, he had a duty to do as well, as we all do. It's called the duty of being a good citizen.
Right.
And being a good citizen means that you treat your other citizens well, and you don't threaten cops and do things that make cops nervous. That's one of the duties of being a good citizen. Michael Brown clearly was had a criminal nature there going. You know, he was abusing another citizen through a crime, and then, from what we know from the facts, he abused a police officer, which was also a criminal. So he did not do his duty as a citizen. He acted as a criminal two times right in a row. And so therefore, you know, along with the evidence, we have the officer doing his duty and Michael Brown not doing his duty, yet people are angry that the officer did his duty and they've let Michael Brown off the hook for all of his behavior. That's outrageous. And that was an adult. Michael Brown was an adult. So he knew what he was, you know, about out there. So, I mean, I'm really bothered by that. And I want to bring up one other thing.
Sure.
Because, you know, we do have this issue about driving while black, walking while black, and is it as bad as some people say it is? And I'm not saying there aren't neighborhoods that it could be really problematic, but I asked my two sons after the Ferguson issue, and my two sons will be considered by society to be black, because one is biracial, one is black. I asked my two black sons, are you frightened of the police? Now, we live in Prince George's County, Maryland, and the police have had a history of, you know, being a little bit behind Los Angeles at certain points in time for police brutality.
Right.
So, you know, it's not that, you know, I'm not saying PG County is like that now, but I'm saying they've had a history, you know, in the past. I asked my sons, are you afraid of the police? And both of them shook their heads and said, nope, we never have any concern about the police here. And I asked them, why is that? And they said, because we don't act like thugs.
No.
We act appropriately. We act appropriately on the street. We act appropriately in the car. And if an officer ever comes up to us, and they call them officers, if an officer ever comes up to us for any reason, we know that he's doing his duty and that he is, you know, he's scared of us because he doesn't know who we are. We at least know he's a police officer. He doesn't know if we're packing a, you know, packing heat at that moment because we just killed somebody, and that we're going to kill anybody who gets in our way. Sometimes that's what happens to cops. They stop somebody for a traffic stop, and all they're thinking of doing them is giving a ticket for a broken taillight.
Sure.
They get shot down because a guy just committed a crime and is on the run. They don't even know that, and so they die instantly, not even realizing that they were just, this simple traffic stop is going to be the end of them. So my sons recognize that every cop they come in contact with is unsure of them. And they know you treat the police officer with respect. You say sir or ma'am. You keep your hands in sight at all times. And you never make any quick moves.
Yep.
So that they think you might be going for a weapon. It's that simple. And they say, we have never, you know, and they totally admit, oh, some of them are assholes.
Yep.
Some of them are total dicks.
Yep.
But hey, you know, that doesn't mean that we, you know, we just act very politely, and they go away, you know, and we go away too,
yeah.
One piece. So that is a duty of a citizen. So we, as citizens, must take that duty seriously to act right in our with the other citizens and with the police officers in our town.
Well, you treat somebody as you expect to be treated by them, and that's just common sense. But when you get the...
it comes to a police officer. First of all, the police officer is armed.
Yep.
And you know that police officer is armed. And you know that if he feels his life is threatened, he is going to protect himself. That's his. He's got to do that.
Absolutely.
You don't go up to an armed man and threaten him in any way, shape, or form. You don't want to scare an armed man that he might pull the trigger. And, you know, one of the things people don't seem to get is when this incident went down, things happen so fast.
Yep.
And, you know, even if you're out there every day as a police officer, you are not confronting life-threatening situations very often. I mean, it is shocking. It's shocking to them as it will be to us to suddenly have somebody do something and think, oh, my God, that, you know, what's happening here? It happens in seconds. You only have a few seconds to think, and you think you might be going to be dead. So you react, and you cannot expect a police officer to say, let me think about this. What is he really doing?
Yeah.
Like, one of the points somebody made was that, I think Darren Wilson at some point said that Michael Brown reached into his waistband, you know. And, you know, some people would say, well, you know, he obviously doesn't have a gun because he was reaching for the officer's gun.
Well, you know,
seconds later, when you see that guy reaching into towards his waist, you panic because you don't know that.
When he did his interview with...
Let me think. Rationally speaking,
yeah,
he did this a while back. Perhaps you don't have time to think. You think, oh, my God, his hand is going, where should we go? You know, and that's the way you're going to react. So I don't think people understand how this all plays out. And, you know, and again, you know, but the criminal doesn't know this. I believe Michael Brown knew exactly what he was doing, what kind of threat he was posing to the police officer. He just had issues, you know, and, you know, that's the kind of person he was. And I know the parents of Michael Brown have said, we're out disparaging his character. I'm sorry, but he was in a store committing a crime and threatening a citizen, and then he threatened a police officer. I don't think we can disparage his character much more than that. He's just not a good poster child for this particular issue.
Yeah, and using his size to his advantage, I think Wilson said that it was like a five-year-old grabbing the Incredible Hulk. And police officers are trained to eliminate the threat, to protect your life or others, and that's just the way it goes. Now, what about New York, the chokehold? A little different situation?
Have I lost you there?
No, I'm still here, Pat.
Dana?
Yeah, I'm still here. Well, it looks like we lost Pat Brown for a second. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Okay, we're back. Sorry about that. That was a phone gremlin, looks like, on my end. Pat Brown, you can hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Okay. Well, the comment I was making, apparently you weren't hearing me, is when Officer Wilson did his interview with Stephanopoulos, he was talking about how it felt like he was a five-year-old grabbing the Incredible Hulk's arm, and how police officers are trained that when their life is in danger or they're protecting the lives of others, that they just eliminate the threat. They don't try to let Hollywood schmaltzy wound, shoot him in the finger, or, you know, give him a kung fu grip. This was a life-or-death situation.
Exactly. You know, I mean, and some people mocked him to say, oh, you know, you're making a big deal of this. But, again, we're talking about a panic situation because you do not know this person, and this person is doing something which they should not be doing. That is not something a citizen should be doing. And when they've taken that step, when they go over that line, you don't know what to expect from them. And one of the things you're trained is that since you don't know what to expect from them, you have to protect yourself, I mean, at that point in time. I mean, we're not talking about somebody who is, a 10-year-old, at 50 feet,
right.
Something like that. You know, where you're like, okay, he's got nothing in his hand, he's 10 years old, and he takes one step towards you and you blow him away. This is not the case. This is a case where the officer felt that this very large person who was being threatening toward him could hurt him in the next few seconds, and if he did not stop him. And that is a requirement by law And I mean, when you pull a weapon and you pull the trigger on the weapon, you have to believe that you're about to die if you don't do that. And I think Darren Wilson believed that. Yeah. I think he had reason to believe that.
Absolutely. Quickly, because I want to talk to you a little bit about Bill Cosby, but the New York situation, a little bit different. We don't know the grand jury details because they're sealed, but we certainly have a video, a very large individual, a chokehold, sadly, a death involved. What about that one?
Well, you know, I really haven't examined that one terribly well yet, I must admit. But I'll say this about chokeholds. You know, chokeholds are used because that's what you've got to use sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, when the person is out of control and they're not responding again. And I don't know the exact details of this particular incident, but here's the thing about chokeholds by police or by private security, because chokeholds are used a lot like bars. You know, if you're a bouncer at a bar, you chokehold people quite often because you ask them to leave and they get in your face and they say, "I'm not going." And then they start moving in on you. What do you do?
Yeah.
You know, do you let them hurt you? Well, if you can chokehold them and get them out of there, that's what you do. So there's quite a few people chokehold, but most of the time nothing goes wrong. So when something goes wrong, then you have to, you know, then it becomes, you know, you really have to do an investigation to find out whether the chokehold was a legitimate method to be used in that situation. And, you know, whether it was just an unfortunate accident or something really, you know, something really done illegally. And that's what they're going to have to determine with the grand jury.
Well, I've got cable news on in the background here, and it looks like Times Square is going nuts tonight. So here we go again, and there will be more to this story, I'm sure. But in the last few minutes that we have you, Bill Cosby, Pat, you and I are about the same age. I can remember Bill Cosby long before the Cosby Show, the records in the 60s and Fat Albert and the early I Spy with Robert Culp. And, and he was always a hero, you know, a guy that you relied on, the Jell-O commercials and the fun stuff. And all of a sudden, I think we're up to 17 accusers. It looks to me, allegedly, that he's no more than a rapist. What about that? What about the Bill Cosby we see on TV and the Bill Cosby that we're hearing about now?
Well, first of all, I think we have to separate, as usual, an actor from a human being.
Yeah.
An actor is an actor, a human being is a human being. So what he does, what an actor does, just like Michael Jackson, what a great dancer. What a great performer.
Right.
I know, you know, Mr. Michael Jackson has his issues. Before he died, he had lots of issues. But that was not anything about his performance. Bill Cosby was a great performer, was a great actor. Now, if you go to the fact where he's presenting himself to the public, like, you know, whether it was a role model or he's, you know, working with the college, representing them, that becomes a different issue because then we talk about character. Now, the problem with this whole situation is what actually happened. And, you know, so far, first of all, I've always had a problem with people not reporting what they call rape to the police.
Right.
If a person has committed a violent crime against you, it should be reported immediately to police. I mean, whether you're comfortable with it or not, and I know a lot of women are not, but that is a fact. I mean, if they committed a crime, then you have to stand up about that crime. And you have to allow the evidence to be presented immediately, not 40 years later, where there is no evidence, just your word. And, you know, and that really bothers me because he should have the right also to be able to defend himself, and you can't do that years and years and years later when there's, you know, no way he can possibly do it. So I would have liked to have seen if these women really had these issues with him to have gone to law enforcement way back when. That's one problem. The second problem is, if we're talking about violent rape, are we talking about what we usually know as seduction, or the casting couch? Because let's face it, I lived in Hollywood for a year, and I was a wannabe model and actress, and wasn't very successful. And one of the reasons I wasn't successful, at least besides the fact that I don't think I had any talent, but putting my talent lack aside, I made a rule that I would never succumb to a casting couch. And I didn't get a lot of work because I didn't do it.
Yeah.
And believe me, I had a lot of the casting couch stuff happen. And well, mostly what it was somebody saying, look, if you sleep with me or commit this sexual act, you'll have a chance for an acting role or a modeling job. And is it right? No. Is it rape? No. What it is a bribe. Well, you know, and if you want to sell yourself to get a chance to do that, then you've made a decision as a female or a male, because as casting couch exists for males too. You made a decision to sell yourself for, in a lot of cases, not even for, you're not even getting money right on the spot. You just may or may not get a job in the future. That's a choice. And I'm saying it's ugly. Casting couch is an ugly thing. It's a terrible thing for young people because they succumb to it very easily because they're so enthralled by becoming a star that they will often do the casting couch over and over and over again, you know? So now the question comes down to, was Bill Cosby a rapist or was he involved in the casting couch?
Yeah.
And if he was involved in the casting couch, and to me, the majority of these claims look like casting couch claims to me, more so than any kind of rape claim. You know, if he was doing something that they considered disgusting, acting in a lewd manner, and I think anybody who's been around long enough might have experienced certain people acting in a lewd manner. And I certainly experienced that too. You go to your interview, and the guy suddenly unzips his pants and says, "Here," and walks towards your face, and you're like, "Really? Go away.
Okay.
Put it back in. Get away from me. You're creepy." You know, and you know, but I didn't think that was rape. I didn't think that was a sexual assault. I just thought it was he's being a disgusting, behaving human being. Now, if he had grabbed me physically and jumped on top of me, we would have had another story going there.
Yeah.
In fact, he was just being crude. You know, I don't call that a sexual assault. I call that being crude. You know?
Well,
so that I don't know what happened with Bill Cosby. I don't know if it was casting couch. I don't know whether there was any real rape involved or any real sexual assault. I do know that he can't defend himself. It's impossible.
Yeah.
And we also have no idea how many of these women are telling any of the truth. Because once this stuff gets out, I mean, I was in Hollywood too. I can claim I went to the Playboy Mansion, you know, and hooked up with Bill Cosby and went in the back room with him, and Bill Cosby did the same thing to me.
Sure. Well, absolutely.
I can claim that. And will people believe me? Oh, my God, you know, that's the profile of Pat Brown. She must be telling the truth.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe I can get some good money off of Bill Cosby to shut up. You know, I mean, how do we know these women are telling the truth? I mean, I don't know. And, you know, so, you know, do I believe there could have been a casting couch? Yes. I don't really see tremendous evidence that there was outright rape. I just believe there might have been lewd behavior. Does it do Bill Cosby a lot of good? No, it obviously has just been devastating to his reputation.
Yeah.
I don't know if he deserves it or he doesn't deserve it.
We shall see.
I don't think any of us know whether he deserves it or he doesn't deserve it. And that's the sad thing about it, is that it's hard to take a side. I think one shouldn't take a side if one doesn't have evidence.
Yeah.
I don't have evidence that Bill Cosby committed a crime. And if I don't have evidence that Bill Cosby committed a crime, I'm not going to say that he did.
Yeah. Pat Brown, criminal profiler, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Okay, Dennis.
Take
care.
Bye-bye. That's Pat Brown, criminal profiler, and she's always a woman who speaks her mind. And speaking of which, we're going to take a break here on Channel 7 and Scared Monkeys Radio, and we'll be back with Wendy Murphy, former sex crimes prosecutor, and we'll continue talking about Mr. Cosby. Hey, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. Wendy Murphy is a former sex crimes prosecutor, author. She does a lot of work, legal work, a law professor, and her most recent article talking about Mr. Bill Cosby, called The Bill of Wrongs, is the reason why I bring her on the show tonight. Wendy, welcome back.
Good to be with you again, Dana.
Now, you and I are about the same age. We won't share what that is. I remember Bill Cosby. I remember Bill Cosby and I Spy and the Fat Albert cartoons. And later on, of course, while my kids were growing up, the Cosby Show on TV, we always thought wonderfully of Bill Cosby. I've seen him in person, but all of a sudden now he's taken a big fall off that mantle. Tell us about your article.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that fascinates me about the seemingly super, super, super good guys is how suspicious I am. Probably it's just a function of my work, but I'm always just a little bit more suspicious than most people about whether it's just a cover or whether it's a useful persona to be beloved in your character on television, in part because you're trying so hard to distract people from knowing your real ugly self.
Right.
So I can't say that I've ever thought about Bill Cosby as a terrible man. All I could say is I wasn't surprised. And I'm talking about going back in 04 and 05 when some of these reports first surfaced. I wasn't surprised then. I was even less surprised this time around, obviously. What strikes me the most, I think, is how hard it is for people to understand the pain that we all feel as, having had this kind of cultural trust in the man's persona and what it does to us when that trust is betrayed. I mean, he's just as capable of saying, well, you're all so stupid for thinking I was any kind of a saint. I never promised you a rose garden, blah, blah, blah. But in fact, he made a lot of money off of our willingness to be invested in his goodness, his seeming goodness. And I just think it's important for us culturally to acknowledge the loss that we all feel when we do give our sense of trust away. And I don't think it was frivolous with Cosby, because he wasn't just a nice dad on television. He was also a benevolent, generous, socially active guy who claimed to care about the world and kindness and really put himself out there. And when that has to be uncovered and, when somebody is revealed as a monster, not just a guy who had a bad day, but a downright predatory monster who drugged women into oblivion and then raped them and left them like yesterday's trash, I can't think of a more barbaric way to treat a human being. It's just some of the most grotesque behaviors I've seen. And it's not that he was especially violent. It was that he was so disrespectful and inhumane to these people, putting somebody into an unconscious state because they declined to submit to you sexually. I mean, you may as well treat the person like luggage, dirt, garbage. It's just so inhumane. And it could not be further away from our sense of what kind of guy this man was. And as I said on CNN and I wrote my piece, it's like hearing that Santa Claus raped one of the elves.
Yeah.
It's incredibly painful to believe in somebody's evil when you can't let go of your sense that this was a person filled with goodness to the point of almost sainthood. Because you really have to give up a little bit of faith in humanity to accept the reality of who he is. Asking people to give up their faith in humanity is a very, very big deal. And that's why I find it just so atrocious that he exploited us that way.
You know, the image is one thing, but the real man is another thing. And some are saying, Wendy, that, and I know where you're going to answer this, and I know how I've answered it, why wait so long, 20, 30, 40 years later, for some of the victims to come forward?
Well, not everybody did wait. Remember, right now it's 2014. A lot of the same victims came forward in 04 or 05, at least in terms of being willing to support the one woman who filed her suit. But to the extent some are even older, and that's absolutely true, there are women who have been talking about things dating back to the 70s. Maybe earlier, I can't even remember, but this is clearly a man who's been predatory for a very long time. And what happens when you get away with it the first time and the second time and the 24th time is, of course you expect to keep getting away with it, and he has. And it just says an awful lot about our culture that we would reward him with the kind of entitlement that he enjoyed. But when you have a culture that gives away entitlement like that, where you're saying not just here's some wealth, power, and success and adoration, but here's a license to rape, when you say that, and that is what was said in a sense to these women, when you make it clear that it doesn't matter if they come forward, it doesn't matter what they say, it doesn't matter how many victims there are, nobody will dare to take him down. Why would anybody come forward ever?
Right.
I mean, on the one hand, you say, well, what took them so long? My reaction was, good for you for coming forward ever, because they still face ridicule. They still face criticism. That I'm not going to say shame. Nothing that happened should be described as shameful toward the victims. The shame is entirely his. But for the victims who felt terrified that by coming forward they would be destroyed, and I don't mean just emotionally. I mean in their careers, in their personal lives. You know, would there be retaliation? Was he wealthy enough to hire somebody to ruin their lives, blow up their homes? You know, it's not beyond reason to envision these women saying to themselves, sure, I feel offended. This was horrific. This was disgusting. This is outrageous. This is a felony. What's going to happen if I tell? And for a couple of the women who did tell, the prosecutor said, and that we see it time and time again in even run-of-the-mill raid cases, sorry, I'm not politically inclined to take this case. No. Not because you're not credible or we don't believe you, or you know that 10 or 20 victims lined up with each other isn't a strong enough case, but because Bill Cosby's too important, wealthy. He's going to pay for my next campaign reelection fund. He's going to, you know, donate to or, you know, do an appearance at some political fundraiser. Or, very simply, I don't think I can win a case against Bill Cosby because all of the jurors are just going to look at him doe-eyed and think, he can't rape people. He's Mr. Huxtable, Dr. Huxtable.
Yeah.
If you can't get your head around the idea that even wealthy, powerful, and beloved people should be subjected to justice like the rest of us, then you should not be a prosecutor. But in fact, that is a big reason why the victims didn't come forward. They know, like very many people know, that prosecutors are political animals. They make prosecutorial decisions based not on what justice demands, but who the perpetrator is and what the political consequences of going forward might be. And the natural result in terms of society is rape happens with impunity, and this is Exhibit A in that problem.
Yeah, and then you get high-profile defense attorneys that come forward and try to re-victimize the victims. No wonder they're afraid. Just have a couple of minutes left with you, Wendy. One of the lines in your article, again, the Bill of Wrongs, why seemingly good people get away with murder. If Bill Cosby is a bad guy, whom can we trust, and how on earth do we figure out who the real good guys are? That's a big part of this story.
That's a huge part of the problem, yes. And it's something I always dealt with as a prosecutor. How do you penetrate the desire of decent human beings who come in for jury duty and want to do the right thing and yet have this internal core of resistance to see the obvious and will literally latch on to the absurd explanations that defense attorneys throw at them because it feels so much better to continue to believe in the goodness of a guy like Bill Cosby, or for that matter, to believe in the idea that a man who looks like their next-door neighbor or their brother or their father could be capable of brutalizing a woman or a child. It feels so terrible to believe that people are capable of such hideous violence that accepting even silly excuses to find doubt is an easy task. It's really, unfortunately, easy for all the wrong reasons. It scares the hell out of us, Dana. To think that Bill Cosby could be a predatory monster means that we have to look at the people in our own lives, our brothers, our cousins, our friends, the doctors and lawyers and the judges and the people that we believe are the good people in our lives. We have to look at them and think, this could be you. And what do we have to give up to open our minds up to such a horrific reality? You literally have to give up the sense that people are innately good. You have to, in a sense, accept that we live in a very scary place where you really can't trust people. You can't presume that people are good. That's a philosophical, upside-down attitude for most of us, and it's a scary and hard thing to do. But in my opinion, it's really, you know, it's really where we need to be, because in a world where people are malevolent and selfish and vicious and mean and willing to do the things Bill Cosby did, we all should live our lives where we're mindful of who we trust and who we don't trust, and that we don't just give our trust away. We expect people to earn it and to demonstrate their goodness through their relationships with us and not through some kind of silly television show. And that's a good life lesson in this case and in so many others. And by the way, it will make us much better, much fairer jurors in all cases involving violence against women and children once we can literally give up that silly idea that all people are always presumed decent and kind and good. You've got to let that go in order to be able to look at a guy who looks like your father, your brother, your next-door neighbor and say he could be capable of doing this. Because, in fact, Dana, those kinds of people are exactly the ones who are raping and abusing women and children.
Absolutely. Well said. Wendy, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Wendy Murphy, former sex crimes prosecutor. She's an author. She's a law professor. And she tells it like it is. And Bill Cosby, although high up on that mantle of someone we trusted, looks like that mantle has come out from underneath him, and he may be nothing more than a sexual predator. I guess we'll see. Victims are victims, and they should not be re-victimized, whether it's 20, 30, 40 years later. If they're coming forward with the story, Mr. Cosby needs to answer. That's it. That's tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it. You can hear us here live at scaredmonkeysradio.com. Of course, we're also broadcast on Access Channel 7, and I hope you'll join me soon on the Dana Pretzer Show. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.